Jesse, alcoholic.
Jesse.
Thank you, Larry, for asking me to speak. I have a lot of respect for you, and you know, and I know you do a lot for Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's cool to watch. You're not going to be doing that bell thing while I'm speaking, right? Okay, so 5 minutes, the bell's coming. Okay. Throw me off a little bit. Let's see. Here, let's get this over here. There we go. I'm a real alcoholic, and Alcoholics Anonymous has absolutely saved my life. I want to make sure I say that because... actually, I never even really had a life before AA. I was a career loser, and somehow, you know, I have a life through Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, it's really that simple. And you know, a couple things I want to touch on before I kind of get going is this is kind of throwing me off here too. There we go. I'm not an authority on Alcoholics Anonymous either. I'm just a guy. I'm just a garden variety drunk, man. And thank God I found this place. Not this place, but Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I first got here, I introduced myself as an alcoholic and an addict and all this other stuff. And I think it was like a couple years sober, I just had this like epiphany of why I shouldn't be doing that. And what if I'm up here or at any other meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm just like talking about drugs and all this other stuff? And what if just this person who only drinks booze, which is what we're here for, comes in and hears my story about all these drugs? So what if they come in and say, hey, I didn't do that. Maybe I don't fit here. Maybe this isn't right. So I think it's really important that we hold to the traditions of, like, this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what we talk about. But now, with that said, I mean, this is a speaker meeting, so it's a little different. So, because when I'm sharing at the podium with a share, you know, it's like in a general way, but this is kind of in depth. So I may touch on that a little bit. But I really do have the utmost respect for Alcoholics Anonymous and kind of what this has done for my life. So growing up, you know, I had, and I want to thank all my buds for coming out. Thank you so much. But growing up, you know, I had a great, great family. Like on paper, if you look at my life on paper, I shouldn't be alcoholic. I got a, you know, mom and dad are together. None of my other siblings are alcoholic. My dad was my baseball coach. My, you know, soccer coach was there for me. You know, all the regular stuff, you know, like I had a great upbringing and, I didn't have, you know, a lot of things, you know, growing up, that really stuck with me. I did have some old ideas that I'll get into that have stuck with me until, you know, I did the steps. But, so yeah, I had this good upbringing, good family, but I had this feeling from an early age, like I hear it a lot that, you know, I didn't fit in or something was different. I just had this overwhelming feeling like all the time that nothing is ever enough. You know, it's like, and my mom can just tell stories and stories about it. It's like, I was just always running a mile, just always going. I'm going over to Derek's house. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. I'm going over here. And my mom's like, just relax for a minute, please. And I really, you know, I was hard on my parents. I was a really hyperactive kid. It's funny when Mike was doing the 10 minutes. He was talking about the tantrum thing. And I have a 2.5-year-old that loves doing that. And it's funny, we try to go to Hawaii every year, and like we're on this nature hike in the forest, and this kid is just delirious. And I had to hold my line, and he's in a timeout in this forest by this tree, and all these people are walking by, and I'm like, turn around, you're on timeout. And he's crying, and the guide's like, whoa, what is going on over there? And he's exactly like me. And I see myself, and it's so hard. I see just these alcoholic tendencies in this 2-year-old, and it's so crazy. And I know, I told my sister and my parents, I knew that that my kids were going to be crazy. I just prepared myself for it. And she's like, no, you don't know. I'm like, just watch. It's going to be payback. And I mean, he's a great, great boy. Don't get me wrong. But it's taxing. Yeah. So, and it's crazy too how you get, like in Alcoholics Anonymous, you get used to, you know, different meetings. Like I got four resentments before this thing even started. I'm like, nobody gives people a cake. They're just like, and they only have a minute. We take a break and all this stuff. What's going on? This is crazy. It's an Alcoholics Anonymous. I just don't get out much. It's the bottom line. So, anyways, I do digress. Forgive me. So life is, you know, I have a good family. Everything's, you know, you know, hunky-dory. So growing up, though, I had this overwhelming feeling that nothing was ever enough for me. And it just, like, I was always going. And I was pretty, I was always athletic. So I would play, start with baseball. And I was always pretty good at baseball. And then soccer. And then I would have these moments of, like, of not brilliance. That sounds really grandiose. But, like, I had some good moments in sports. But I never had, like, the moxie or the determination or these, like, qualities to, like, really go to the next level in any type of athletics. So it was like, oh, I'm bored with that. So I did that with baseball. Then I went to soccer. Then I went to whatever it was, hockey and all these sports. And I know I drove my dad crazy because, like, I'd go try out for the soccer team, and it was like this tryout, and I would just kill it. You know, the coach is like, I got to have that kid. And I show up, I'm a dud. You know, I just... just got nothing, like, whatever, dude. And sometimes I'd show up, sometimes I would, you know, I'd be there, but mentally, sometimes I'd show up, sometimes I wouldn't. And, you know, that's tough. That's tough on your mind to always not be present. It is a tough place to be because I was never, like, present anywhere. And I was always trying to be somewhere else. So early on as a kid, I remember I'd read something, and I could read it. I could read out loud for the class, but I didn't know what I just read. Like, I had no idea. Like, I don't know. I heard Sally talking in the corner. I was thinking about kicking the rock on the way to school. So at an early age, I had this old idea that I was dumb. And, you know, we talk about in the fourth step, you know, we get down to these causes and conditions, and these old ideas kind of form who we are. And it's a good thing to, when we get into the steps, you can kind of like get into that stuff and uncover all these things. So I had this old idea that I was dumb, and I remember at an early age, so this is back in, you know, the late 80s. And I remember, so the medication, like ADD and ADHD, it wasn't really diagnosed like it is today. And it's probably better that I wasn't on a bunch of meds. probably was. But so I remember telling my mom, I think I have like a problem. And she's like, no, you don't. Like, you're fine. You know, she got me tutoring or something, but I just was never there, you know. So needless to say, I had this old idea. And I'm just going through school. I never got great grades, but what I did is I always pretty much, like, getting into high school, all I pretty much did was just cheat and copy. That's all I did. I have a high school diploma, but it doesn't mean a thing. Not a single thing. No, like, I'll be talking to people, and we're talking about, like, world history and geography and, like, you know, all this stuff, and it's right, boom, gone. I don't know. I missed that class. You know, Civil War, huh? But I don't even know what that is. And, you know, I could sit here and, you know, hey, it is what it is, you know, and I remember, junior or senior year, just to kind of give you an example, I was in AP statistics. I have no idea how. It was like random. And these, so in that class or statistics, you had, it was like not just multiple choice, it was written out, you know? So I had this girl, Sarah Hollis, I still know her, and she was like in every one of my classes. So it was like perfect, like first period, I'd copy for second period, and it was just like this thing. So the test, this one test, I literally, like word for word, almost copied her whole thing, paragraphs. So the teacher's going around like, oh, you know, Joe, you got an 85, good job. Oh, Jesse, I need to talk to you after. And I'm like, why? I studied so hard. Let's talk now. Let's talk. I don't know what's going on. So we talked after, and I was able to convince this teacher. I studied with Sarah. She'll vouch for me. I was over there 3 hours a day. This is crazy. And I ended up getting a B. And so I think, so I was able to always turn on some charm or charisma or whatever it is and just kind of get by and just get by. And it's funny because I was talking about my son Tyson. He's 2.5 and he does that. It's like I'll yell at him for something. He goes, but daddy, my guys, or something like really cute. And I go, listen, dude, I invented that. Don't stop. Stop. Okay. And he'll keep going. And then he just hook, line, and sinker. I'm like, oh, I love you, buddy. And it's just crazy. And yeah, he's just working it. And so that was kind of like my high school career. And then it even got, you know, a million times worse when I started drinking and using drugs. And I remember in high school, you know, so I had I had like these morals. I remember that I knew that I shouldn't be drinking and I shouldn't be smoking pot and I shouldn't be doing this other stuff. So I had this feeling in my heart that like what I was embarking on wasn't a good idea and like my parents wouldn't approve of it. And but I think that pain of always like not being present and always want to be doing something else. The first time I drank, not the first time, but when I really started getting into it and smoking pot and drinking, it gave me that ease and comfort, like that everything's just going to be okay, you know? And my dad, he's not alcoholic, and he still does not get it to this day, like how people could, like, drink in the morning or what. And I try to explain to him, or how they could drink every day, I've told him, you know, 20 times, but he's just a normal drinker. He doesn't understand that I am so turmoiled that a bottle of booze just makes everything okay for me. And it doesn't matter if I just totaled my car or got a ticket or flunked out of school. If I got a bottle of booze, I'm going to be all right. And like that just makes no sense to him, you know? I did forget to mention that I do have a sobriety date, and it's April 22nd of 2004. And I did speak at this meeting a while ago, and it was like this section right here. So that's what I was expecting, actually. So it's grown significantly. Which is cool. It's cool. So anyways, so I'm doing my thing in high school, and I'm just in my – I was a third kid, so my parents definitely did the best that they could. But I was kind of like – they just didn't really oversee too much of, like, what was going on. They never wanted me to have parties at the house because it was a liability. But other than that, like, they didn't really check my report cards. And back then, it wasn't like, you know, I was – everything wasn't online. So I was, like, truant all the time and stuff like that. But – so I just kind of skated by. And so I'm really getting hot and heavy and at this time smoking pot and drinking a lot of booze in high school. And I really didn't know what I wanted to do or wanted to be, and decided, okay, I'm going to go to – so I actually graduated, and I went to Cuyamaca College for like 2 semesters. And then my mom was like paying for that, and I – after, like, you know, college is a whole different – you can't do what I was doing in college. It's just different. I don't know the people, so I can't copy off of them. And and you have to show up to class. So that wasn't really working for me. And, like, I remember I, like, took – you know, I took the money for a little bit and, like, used it. And then finally I just said, you know, school's not for me. And, you know, kind of did my thing. And at that point, I was working at this hotel in Del Mar. It's called L'Auberge. It's like right on 15th Street. So it was actually like a really cool job to have for an 18, 19, 20 year old, whatever. And it like really enabled me for a little while. Cause you'd make like 100-something bucks and tips a day. And, you know, for somebody who like drinks and smokes pot, that's perfect. You know, just like, the people I'd like buy pot from, they didn't like it cause I'd give them like a bunch of ones all the time. Like, dude, come on. 50 ones? Like, take it or leave it, bro. Take it or leave it. Anyways, so I kind of start, you know, doing my thing. I'm working at the hotel. I drop out of college, and life is just like whatever. It's okay. I have a girlfriend, and we met in high school. We're still together, and at this time, anyways. And I had this like separate life, you know, they talk about that, like the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It's not quite like I had that, but I really lived like that double life where I wanted people to see like who I wanted them to see, because my family, they didn't really drink much. Nobody did any drugs. So I had my do my thing around them. And my girlfriend was the same way. And so I remember all through high school, like I'd party with my boys and all their friends, but she was never really around because I didn't want her to see that side. And like, I had like in my car, the amazing like sober kit. Like I had Visine, I would spray Febreze all over myself, actually. Cause I smoked cigarettes too. And nobody knew I smoked cigarettes. So a Visine, oh, just this kit, you know, just like, you need to get sober, like, let's do it, man. Like, I got it. My eyes are dilated. I forget what I had for that. Like, so I had this, like, double life I was living. And so I'm working at this hotel, and at this point, I remember I had this truck, man. It was so cool. I supercharged, and I love it. At this time, this is, like, by around, like, 2001, but right when September 11th happened. And, you know, so like me and my buddies, we would all like race cars. Like up, I don't know if they still do it, but up in Kearney Villa, Miramar, they would like race cars there. And so I was a part of that. And it was, I got involved like right by 9/11. And it was awesome for a while because there was no cops, because it was just such a, you know, global, like it was such a disaster that cops weren't really worried about street racers for a while. But then every like week it would get worse and worse where cops would come around, and I'm drinking and driving. I have drugs in the car, and so I'm drinking and driving and racing. So it's not a good deal. So one night I leave the hotel, and I had a couple drinks because it was like, we went to Ilfern Isle right across the street, and I knew the guy there. And so I meet my boys down there because it always went at like 12 o'clock at night. Go down there, and we're racing, hanging out. And bottom line is this, like, sting operation happened where, like, helicopter, paddy wagon, roadblocks. You can't go anywhere. We're going back and forth. And I go up, and, like, the guy brings me out of the car, handcuffs me, News 8 is in my face. I'm the first guy, like the first guy they pull out of, like hundreds of people. And I had a LaBear shirt on. News 8 is like, we caught you on film racing. And like, I was like, I doubt that. I didn't know what to say. And so then the cop brings me over. I'm in cuffs. And he's like, hey man, like, he's like, have you been drinking? I go, no. And so I had this just awful panic attack. People talk about panic attacks. I've never had one, but I'm guessing this is what it feels like. My world started closing in on me in my ears. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I couldn't really hear good. And I started sweating like crazy. And the cop like looked at me. He's like, hey, Johnny, we got a sweater. Get this guy in the van. So Johnny brought me into the van. I had some time to like think about it. And I forgot to mention, like, literally a week before this, at this time I'm living at home, like any good 22-year-old should be doing. And my mom was like, hey, like, you come home really late. What are you doing on the weekends? I'm like, it's really cool. Check this out. These guys race, and we all go and watch. It's awesome. But it just happens late at night, and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, okay, well, you know, if you got arrested or something happened, I want to, like, know what's going on. I'm like, why? I wouldn't get arrested. Why would I get arrested? And she's like, oh, okay, cool. So, like, literally a week later, I'm at downtown calling mommy, you know. So I got arrested for racing, and but when I was in that van, I remember this cop started searching my car, and he brought out like a 4-foot bong, put it on the like out of your car. Why do you need a four? Why do you need that in your car? These other things, and it was I that panic attack got way worse. I was just dying. And then the next guy that came in, he's like, man, have you been drinking? You smell. I'm like, oh, I'm so screwed. Because I thought I was going to get the racing, a DUI, possession, and all this stuff. So I got to jail, though, and they gave me my thing, and it was just like the racing thing, you know? So they forgot about all that. Got, my parents came down, $5,000 cash, bailed me out a couple days or whatever, day later. And so got out of jail, and I told them, you know, it's a big mix up, you know. They didn't buy the mix-up thing. They weren't that bad, but they still bailed me out. This is kind of the beginning, though. So so get out, and, you know, what I – this is – so what I – my life until I got sober, really sober and took the steps was do me until everybody else is like, what the heck is going on, man? You this is a problem. So then get in trouble, straighten up as best I could, and try to, like, present the best foot forward and be who I think you want me to be. And I just start falling back in my ways. And then all of a sudden, I'm back doing me. And the cycle just starts repeating itself. I mean, that's just my story to a T for my whole life. So do that. Get out of jail and start doing that. And I'm not going to do that anymore, blah, blah, blah. And it was a big deal. Like, it was on the news and all that stuff. So I got in trouble. It was like just as bad as being in, getting a DUI. And I remember, though, I went to the police impound to, like, look at my car, because it was like a 30-day impound. And that backpack that he took all that stuff out, it was in there. And I started looking, and all the stuff was in there. It was like Christmas. I got my backpack, and I told the cop, I'm like, hey, I'm just checking on the truck. Got my school gear. I'm out of here. No problem, buddy. So got out of there. So that's kind of just how I just kind of snuck by, like, life like that for a while. So, whatever. Start, you know, clean up, not racing, not doing that stuff anymore. Working at this hotel. And then I'm probably a week after my car got out of impound. So that time that I could be good in front of people started getting less and less, you know. When the alcohol really starts getting a hold of you, it's like it becomes, you got to just be you, and that's drinking all the time. So I was at my buddy's house. He lives in Hamul. Like, I remember this summer, it was crazy. He had like this water volleyball. We like took it really serious. You know, we could drink over there. It was awesome. And he's like, hey, let's go up the road. It's like, I'm drunk and I'm driving, and we start driving. Total the car, basically. I lose control, flip over. We just had board shorts on and no shoes, no seatbelts. Flip the car over. He flips out, and the car was on its side. And I get out, and I'm standing on broken glass, and he's kind of like in a fog. I'm like, Sean, are you all right? He's like, yeah, I'm fine. And I just like knew. I just got arrested. I can't be here. So I just snapped into a Slim Jim. Like, I started rocking this car, standing on broken glass with no shoes. I get it on its side. This is what adrenaline will do for you. Just try it out sometime. I'm standing, and then I jump up on top of it and start rocking it. Bam, bam, bam. And I get it over. I'm rocking it. I get it back on its wheels by myself. Flip this car over. The wheel is back in the wheel well. There's no windows. There's one, like, little one window left. Door wouldn't open. Dukes of Hazzard right in it. People are like, where are you going? I'm like, I'm out of here. It started up. Toyota. Reliable as hell. And so my problem was, though, is I drove back to his house, which is at the end of the dead end. Like, there's no getting out. So I drove back to his house, run inside. I'm not here. And I just, like, for some reason, I thought, okay, I'm just going to go hide in the closet and eat cookies. Because I wanted to get the alcohol off my breath. I could not get a DUI. This is crazy. I can't get a DUI. I hid in the closet for a couple hours. His parents covered for me. They towed my car. As I was leaving, the cop that showed up was talking to the neighbor, and the neighbor said, hey, he's back there. Like, nobody else has driven on this road. He's there. So this cop, as I'm walking out 2 hours later, pulls up. And I'm, like, out there, and, like, I kind of do this slow turnaround, like, totally obvious. Like, he's like, come here. Oh, you know, he puts me in cuffs. They give me a breathalyzer, and I blew, like, 0.07. Because it was, like, 2.5 hours later, and I think the cookies worked. And at the time, there was all these fires going on. I forget which set of fires it was, but it was one of the intense ones. And this guy was working it. And he had to, like, respond to this call. So, he was just, like, over it. He wanted to go home and go to – he's like, you are so lucky that I showed up here, because his partner showed up second, but the guy who first shows up kind of has control of the scene. And this guy had a hard-on for me. He was, like, ready to take me to jail. He's like, this kid's lying, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, this guy's like, I'm so over it. Here, get your car out of impound, dude. Like, have a nice life. So I couldn't I still got out of that. I told everybody that a dog ran out in front of us, and it's a small road in Hamul. So I swerved, and I overcorrected, flipped the car, and all this. And then I ended up getting a hit and run because I mowed all these mailboxes over. And God, when I tell this, I'm like, sometimes I think, like, man, I don't even think I'm alcoholic. And I'll start talking about this, like, dude, what is wrong with you? So I mowed over these mailboxes, get a hit and run, and, you know, got an attorney. Like, my best friend growing up, my absolute best friend, went kindergarten through whatever, his dad was, like, this awesome defense criminal attorney, and he gave, like, a heavy discount. Like, it was awesome. And so he got that hit and run and all this other stuff, all the other charges, to, like, a legal lane change. But with that, yeah, got out of that one. So I had to play it cool for a while. I was playing it cool around mom and dad and trying to be a part of the family. So I worked at this hotel, though, and I knew, like, they run your record because I was a valet bellman, and they run your record constantly just for insurance purposes. And I knew I had, like, a ton of points now on my record. So I knew I couldn't do that. So I was like, well, why don't I start selling cars? I'm going to do that. I drove down to this dealership and said, here I am. I'm going to start selling cars. Are you hiring? They said, yes, you are. So they hired me. Yes, we are. So they hired me, and I started doing that, and all the while, my alcohol and drug use is progressing rapidly. And so, selling cars, doing my thing, I had this little beater for a while. I was trying to play it cool. So I ended up, though, about 6 months later, getting the same truck, put this, like, you know, a little newer, and put a supercharger on, like, the same thing. And at this time, I'm doing a lot of cocaine, and I'm drinking a lot. Those are my two, and pot. So those were my daily three. And I could kind of, like, manage my life by balancing alcohol, cocaine, and pot. And, it's so crazy when you think about that, where you do cocaine, but then you would drink to kind of level you out. And then it's a too much. So you would smoke some pot, and then you have to drink. It's just crazy. Like, just be, man. Just, like, hang out for a minute. I'm spending all this money doing all these drugs and alcohol, you know, drinking a bunch of – it's just – so get this other truck, driving home, and there's just, like – you know, I'm always in a hurry when I'm drinking. Always in a hurry, man. I'm still always in a hurry, but it's, like, 10 times worse when I'm drinking. So it's, like, this line of, like, 20 people – going straight, I decide, you know, the old movie, like, get in the center lane to turn, that light turns green, you cut everybody off, you keep going. That was my go-to. I was going to do that. The person, five people ahead, they decided to, like, leave a gap so somebody else could pull out and turn left. They do that. I'm in that lane driving 50 miles an hour. I T-bone them, total both cars. At this point, I did not have insurance because it was like $300 a month. And that's when you're drinking, insurance is the first thing to go. Like, I don't need insurance. So my boys who drove with me are like, dude, can we get a ride home from somebody else? So that was bad. That was bad. This woman went off in an ambulance and I didn't have insurance. And I remember I called that attorney and, we found a loophole. This was later on, but we found a loophole that you can be in a turning lane. So I said I was turning into the thing over here and you can be in a turning lane for 100 feet or something. And they measured it out and it like just kind of worked out. But at that point the jig was up. I couldn't tell anybody the dog ran out or like it was a misunderstanding. Like I had to get truthful with people. So I told my parents and everybody like, hey, I have a problem with drugs and alcohol. That was the easier, softer way at this time. So they do this research and they have this like intervention after I like kind of like said, hey, I have a problem. They did an intervention on me. I'm like, okay, let's go, man. I'm ready. So they do an intervention. I'm like, all right, cool. I kind of expected this. My sister did all this research, found the special place and time. And, I ended up going to Rancho La Brea. It's not there anymore, but, went there and, you know, I kind of was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. The seed was planted. I hadn't really no idea what AA was or anything. I didn't know any of that stuff like before the first time. And it really, I don't know if you're new here or this is the first time you've been in AA or whatever, or it's so hard when you've been in AA for a little bit and you go out. I'm telling you, it just wears on you. Like you are so screwed. I am so screwed if I go out because I know there's a way of life. I know there's a beautiful way of life out there and I'm killing myself. But before I never had a solution. I was hanging out with these losers because that's who I'm attracted to because I was a loser and they're doing it. So I just tell myself, well, I'm young, you know, and you get older and older. I'm young and you're like doing the same stuff as they're doing. So it all seems like it's normal, but people aren't like going to the liquor store and waiting at 6 to get a frosty thing of Jägermeister and drinking it at 6:30 in the morning. Like normal people are going to work and like doing their thing. But to me that was like okay because I was with my boy and he wanted to do the same thing. So go to Rancho La Brea and they were talking about sober livings and recovery homes. I was like, whoa, I'm 28 days, I'm good. But I kind of just like, I kind of got in there real quick and kind of saw what was going on and I was like, well, maybe I should just, this is actually kind of subconscious. Like, I decided to go to this place called Pathfinders. So I go to Pathfinders because that kind of was the easier, softer way. So I go to this recovery home. I'm doing all the right things. Everybody's happy for Jesse. He's doing this and he's great. And I'm like, I can live in any facility, man. I've been to every ranch. Like, I can do all the chores. I am the best. I go to Pathfinders right now and knock it out for 9 months. No problem. I kill it there. It's easy, man. I'm a recovery home, like, guru. So go to Pathfinders, but, like, 90-something days, you know, I was talking to my old manager, and this is, like, I worked for a Toyota dealership. It's right when the car Scion came out. So I was like, hey, I want to start marketing that new XB, and I have an idea. I've been sober. He said, great, why don't you head that up? So I go to the guy. His name is Tommy. He's dead now, but I told him, hey, I got this, you know, opportunity. And he knew he wasn't going to do anything to change my mind. I was, like, dead set on it. And so I go start working again. And the problem is I'm living with untreated alcoholism. And I had a sponsor, and I did a fourth and a fifth step. But I didn't start making amends, like, right at, like, 9. I was like, whatever. And just kind of like went about my business, started working again. And I remember I'd show up to Pathfinders all the time in a suit And I started getting, like, so I'm doing that, and all of a sudden I remember one night I'm working. It's like 8 o'clock at night, and the obsession hit me. I'm like 6-7 months sober. The obsession hit me harder. Like, this happened one time. It hit me, and I just, like, almost started sweating, but I was like, am I going to drink? Am I not going to drink? And I was going through all this stuff in my head, and I was a Looney Tune driving home. And I was meeting my girlfriend there, and I'm going back in my head. Am I going to drink? Am I not going to drink? What am I going to do? You know, I could probably just drink tonight and be fine or whatever. So I guess I decided that I was going to drink. And so I just, like, pretended to fall asleep so she would leave. I would have the snore, too. I'd be like, when I try to, like, somebody, I'm like, snore and, like, move a little bit. Like, oh, he's really sleeping. I should leave now. So she left. I went to the liquor store and got, like, 240s or something. And that was easy for me to say, well, there goes all my sobriety. You know, all 7 months of sobriety, it's gone. So then I started meeting up with old friends. And slowly but surely, I'm, like, right back where I was at. But right before that, I'm still, like, going to Pathfinders because it's a weird place to be to have some months of sobriety, kind of ditch your old friends, meet some people in sobriety, and then you're, like, in this weird, like, who's my friend? I don't really know who to hang out with. So I'm going to meetings after work. I'm loaded. And it's, like, that's a terrible place to be, in a meeting loaded. So if you're here, like, welcome, and you're loaded. Like, I understand because I've done that. And I kept getting, like, I started getting skinnier and skinnier, like, over, and people were like, hey, you're, like, losing weight. I'm like, yeah, man, I've been hitting the gym. I'm getting ripped up, you know, doing cardio. And, I had this whole elaborate story, you know, and, but I had this, like, realization one night after a meeting, like, or during a meeting, we had a speaker and he was talking about doing that same thing, like, going to meetings loaded. And I was like, what am I doing here? Like, why am I coming around here loaded? So I decided, you know, screw AA, screw this. I accepted in my core that I was alcoholic. And, like, this is just the way it's going to be. And screw it. Whatever. So at that point, it started, like, progressing pretty bad for me. And I started doing things that, of course, I'm sure, you know, a lot of people here have done, you're just, like, really not proud of. You start hurting a lot of people and just having these behaviors that just is real out of character. But it kind of has to go hand in hand with, you know, not working and abusing drugs. And alcohol just kind of is one. So doing that, trying to hang on to a job. And, you know, that finally that same job, that he's like, look, man, I know you're getting loaded, but we can't have you. You can't show up. Like, I would literally be sleeping in the back of a Camry and some guy's, like, going to demo it with people. I'm like, nah. And he's like, oh, let's look over here. Like, I was a bad employee. So it got pretty bad for me, and whatever happened for me to get sober. I remember I was doing, running with people I shouldn't have and doing a lot of things I shouldn't have. And I got jumped at this Motel 6, and there's a travel lodge in El Cajon. It's not a travel lodge anymore, but it's pretty seedy, but I fit right in. But I got hit over the head with this pool cue, and my head busted open. I haven't slept in days, and, like, the ambulance came, and, like, hey, man, like, you need to go to the hospital. I'm like, nope, wrap me up, man, I'm good. So they wrapped my whole head up. I was in a blackout for a couple days, woke up in these people's yard, with a kid, like a kid pointing at me, literally, and a cop knocking on my door. I'm like, ah. And so I just, like, used, like, the Jedi mind control over this cop, like, because he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, sir, I was hit last night. You could see by the bandages. I was on my way to the hospital. Something must have happened. I need a ride. Can you give me one? And he just kind of, like, he was looking around. He's like, yeah, sure. Come on. Move your car out. Let's go. So he gave me a ride to the hospital, and that was just a disaster. Shortly thereafter, I got sober, man. I woke up in my car with the gas light on, with not a penny to my name, nobody to call. I didn't even have a cell phone anymore. That got turned off. I was so lonely, and I know you guys can relate to the loneliness that an alcoholic feels when you're out there and you don't have anybody to call, anybody to hang out to. Like, I would literally drive around. Like, hey man, you want to hang out? Like, I was busted up, dude. I was lonely, man. I had nobody to hang out with. So, I woke up this morning completely depressed, and, I don't know, I just got this thing from God, like, hey, you could, like, well, I had nothing to do, so it's easy to get sober when you have nothing, and not even a cell phone or any gas. I mean, I couldn't even, but I drove to my ex-girlfriend's house, and drove there, and she was like disgusted. The disgust she had in me was just crazy. And she said, look, I would advise you to go to your parents' house. So I did that. And I said, look, guys, I want to get sober. And, a couple people reached out. They came and got me, they said, hey, pack him a little bag. He's coming with us. I went to detox for 10 days. And then they said, hey, you're going to this place at Freedom Ranch. And I kind of heard some weird stuff about it. But then somebody's like, don't worry, they got a golf course. I'm like, all right. And then I, like, we're driving farther and farther out there. I'm like, huh? This ain't right. So I get there, and it was an experience. But you know what? I signed up for it. I had nowhere to go, and I stayed there until they told me, like, what else I was going to do. And I wrote the guy at Pathfinder's letters every week. I said, look, I know you don't let people back in, but I want to be sober, man. I'm ready. Like, just let me back into Pathfinder's, please. He let me back in after 100-something days. I stayed there for 9 months. And I remember at, like, 6 months sober, I was at that pivotal spot that I'm sure some of you guys can relate to, that I was... The pink cloud had wore off, and I was suffering from untreated alcoholism once again. And I hadn't finished doing the steps. And I was at that Y in the road, or T, or whatever. Am I going to finish the steps, or am I going to drink? And I told my sponsor, I said, I can't do this, man. This is too much. So the pain of sobriety was greater than I was feeling. The pain in sobriety was greater than the pain I was having out there. And that's why a lot of people drink, in my opinion. That's why I drink. That's why I continue to drink, because I never committed to Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor said, look, man, you haven't done the steps. Why don't we finish the steps and give this thing a year? You give this thing a year, take the steps, and then you can make an assessment. If this isn't for you, then get lost after a year. Go drink. That's fine. But at least give this thing a shot. So for some reason, I hung on to that. I hung on to the fact, like, okay, let me take the steps, see what happens. And if it doesn't work for me and my life's not better, then I'll go drink again. So it was kind of like I hung on to that, and it was great. Took the steps, started making amends, and amends that didn't even make my list. I was in El Cajon, saw this Pep Boys, and I remember that I stole some brake pads from Pep Boys. And I walk in there and I go, hey, I need to talk to the manager. And brought a manager over. I said, hey, about a year ago, I stole some brake pads for you. I want to make it right. And the guy's like, what? So he's like, hey, Bobby, come over here. So told the story again and talked to Bobby. And I said, look, I stole some brake pads from you guys. I want to pay for them. So we looked it up in the system. He gave me my receipt. I gave him $60. And I walked out of that store feeling free. I've never felt like this. That, like, what my sponsor shared with me about a year sober, give this thing a year and finish the steps, and making amends has molded my sobriety. It got me going, the momentum. It got me going in this thing, sobriety. I walked out of there feeling like, wow, man, I think I just may have a shot at Alcoholics Anonymous. I think maybe I could do this thing. I felt a little freer. I had a little pep in my step. And, I mean, it may seem like nothing, $60 for these brake pads, but it was like a big deal for me. And, That propelled me into making more amends and then sponsoring guys and kind of doing this thing Alcoholics Anonymous. And then now, however many years later, man, like, I have two kids, two crazy kids. My 8-month-old boy, he doesn't stop crying. And sometimes I literally want to just jump out. I live in a 2-story home. I want to jump out the top. And sometimes I feel great. It's like I go, I didn't sign up for this. How is this? It's like a twilight zone for me. I can't believe I have kids and a career and friends and all this stuff. And all I did was take the steps. Like, really? All I did was take the steps to Alcoholics Anonymous and have a life. And like, my home has Quest Plumbing. I don't know if any of you know what that is. Plastic pipes. All these houses in the 80s had it. And I've had all these blowouts. Bottom line, like in my master right now, just like the whole lid is gone. You just see you don't see any drywall. It's just beams and pipes. And I have to replumb my whole house and it's a lot of money. And, you know, it's like it's never a good time to like replumb your whole house. Hey, let's go. But, I guess like what I'm saying is I never had anything close to that like kind of problem however long ago, 8 years ago. And, God, those signs just throw me off every time you throw them up, man. I'm expecting the bell and, so my life though has gotten to this point where I'm blown away on a daily basis. And I think it's my duty to help others and do what I can for anybody. So when I wake up in the morning, I ask God to guide and direct my thinking. And if I could be of useful to anybody, alcoholic or not, please put them in my life and I will do whatever I can to help another person. And I think if I start my day that way, focused on other people, then everything else gets a free ride. So if I can tell anybody here anything, I would advise you to give this thing 1 year. Please take the steps, because you can't judge Alcoholics Anonymous if you haven't taken the steps. Because I did that for years, and that got me nowhere. That got me drinking again. And until I took the steps and really did this deal, then I was able to make an assessment of Alcoholics Anonymous. And at that year mark, I didn't even look back, man. Like, it was crazy. Like, life started going, and here I am however long later, and I'm just so blessed to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous, a group like this. Thanks again, Larry, for asking me to speak.